Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat. This week, we're joined by Eva Jodlaska from the Python Software Foundation. I'm Will Vincent, joined as always by Carlton Gibson. Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. Hello, Eva.
And yes, Eva, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. I think this is the first time I've met you both, so I'm really excited to chat with you more and talk about the PSF.
Yeah, and I think it'll give us a chance to talk a little bit by proxy about the Django Software Foundation, which I'm on and Carlton works for. So
indeed,
that should be great. So maybe, so quickly, you're executive director. What does that mean? And then we want to get into how you came to this role at the head of the PSF.
Yeah, absolutely. So executive director, I mean, there's a lot of hats that are involved, but as an overview, it's pretty much oversight of all of our programs, managing our staff, as well as working with our board of directors to ensure that we're following our strategic plan or whatever kind of plan is at our feet.
And then the PSF is a nonprofit?
Yeah,
just like Django?
Exactly. So the PSF is a 501c3 nonprofit in the U.S., and we are comprised of a board of directors who are volunteers and now 8 of us that are paid staff.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then how long have you been there? Well, so you were as a consultant and then full-time role. Maybe we can dive into, you know, how'd you find yourself in your current position?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a unique road. I don't think there was any clear path forward to where I am today. So it's always really interesting when people ask me, so how did you become executive director? Well, in 2008, I started working for PyCon as a meeting planner, as a contractor for a company that I worked outside of Chicago here in Illinois, where I'm located. Over time, I decided I was going to move to Denmark and try my hand at a master's degree in computer science. So then the PSF was, you know, still excited about keeping me on board for PyCon. So they asked if I wanted to do it part-time. So I did for a little bit. And that lasted a couple of years, maybe not even a full year, before, you know, not just me, but everyone kind of involved realized that we really needed a full-time position to help with PyCon, because that was around 2012, which was, in my opinion, probably the first year where PyCon really blossomed to the size that it is today, when we were in Santa Clara, California. So then I joined the PSF and I became an official employee around that time. And I worked full time. The administrator that used to work for the PSF stepped away. So it was like a part time position that I added into my position. So that kind of got me involved into the PSF side of things and not just PyCon. So that's when I really learned more about, you know, the whole ecosystem and the community and how it's like working with a board of directors. So that was a really interesting transition for me, because it opened up so many other areas of the role that really interested me that wasn't just PyCon, if that makes sense. And over time, I became the director of operations after we hired on some staff. And then I believe last year, I can't believe I don't remember this. I should remember such a great milestone in my life. But a couple of years ago, I became the executive director.
Yeah, it all blurs together.
Yeah, over time, for sure. So it's been more than 10 years at this point in time.
That's amazing. So I have it in my head that you're like kind of responsible for driving the fundraising effort largely.
So
is that
actually it's kind of really exciting question to bring up, because as of Monday last week, we have our first ever director of resource development. So that is now the person that's going to be in charge of our fundraising. And of course, the executive director and the board of directors are always still involved to some capacity. And it will always be my responsibility in the end on how our staff delivers. But we're really excited to have someone kind of spearhead that effort, because that also opens up the door for not just corporate fundraising, but also grant fundraising, all the different things we could do with donation drives. And it's just, we're no longer restricted on the resources that we put forth on that effort, which is really exciting.
One thing that, thinking about the Django environment, we're obviously much smaller and, you know, we have the couple of fellows, I'm part-time, Maris is full-time, but beyond that, it's funding Django Girls, funding the Django Cons. And then it's kind of like, what would we do to bring money into Django, and then what would we need it for? And one of the things is sustainability. But, you know, to look at Python, the PSF, and see what the PSF is doing, it's like, wow, you can actually get out there and really push push to bring him money?
Sustainability is a large topic that I'm sure we can spend just an hour talking about that in itself. You know, to me, the biggest thing is, yes, we can fund for, I mean, William and I were just talking about, you know, funding one-off projects, and those are all great, but to have the structure in place of the staff that can actually support managing that kind of work and making sure it's done efficiently and effectively has really helped us, you know, to build from the ground up to be able to handle all that stuff, which I think has been very beneficial for the PSF.
Especially grants, you mentioned those. I mean, so Carlton has helped lead. We've done Google has a summer of code and a season of docs the last couple of years. I think, I mean, I know we've gotten a couple other grants, but we don't do a lot of that in part because we don't think to apply. And there is that management capacity on top of it. You know, they are giving you money for a reason and they want something to show for it. So, and actually, Carlton, maybe you could mention, I mean, I feel like your summer of code work is completely hidden from people. Most people have no idea that you do anything on that, to be honest.
What do I do? There's an application process that takes quite a lot of time to put in. That's not the hardest bit. The hardest bit is then going through the many applications and trying, and we have capacity to mentor one or two people each year. And that's, but you know, we might have 100 applications. So you've got to try and do justice for those and then working with them. And, you know, Maris has worked with Sage, who did the JSON field previous years. And I've worked with mentees, and you know, we get in there and actually,
I mean, it's real features
with the project,
not just small
stuff. I mean the CrossDB JSON field, that's a major feature, like that's, you know, a big thing. Hopefully this year we're going to get a Redis backend in core. You know, these are important things, and historically Google Summer of Code has been a big thing, but it's not free. You know, it takes quite a lot of effort to put that together, and that's kind of the, well, that's the trick, isn't it? Is how do we manage that on volunteer basis? I mean, I'm paid as a fellow, but I can't put so much time into it because I'm meant to be managing the framework. So, you know, that's one thing I kind of wanted to discuss with you, Ava, was the sort of the non-code side of the PSF and lessons that we might learn for the DSF from that.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's not just about the software.
Absolutely. I think that, Carlton, you have a great setup with how you're supporting, you know, mentors and mentees and all that. And I feel like, you know, the PSF also participates on behalf of Python for Google Summer of Code. And our volunteers do a great job of that. But I feel it's always about building a balance between, you know, how you're spending your work supporting volunteers, managing volunteers, and actually doing the work that you're supposed to be doing outside of that. So we're kind of in this, we're also growing in that aspect. And I know that, you know, for you all, it might not seem that way because you seem to describe the PSF as a much bigger entity, but we do take a lot of things from you all. Like, for example, the fellow role is something that inspired the PSF to recently help CPython hire, we're calling it a developer in residence. And so recently Google gave us funding to hire that position for a year. And we hope that during that year, we can do additional fundraising to kind of help sustain that role. But, you know, it'd be great to provide that support for CPython to help manage some of the work for volunteers and to guide volunteers on the work that needs to be done, help, you know, create a roadmap for Python as it might be, which is something that we've been lacking, or at least lacking in the visibility of to the rest of the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, communicating it's a big thing. Like, what do Maris and I do our best to try and communicate with the rest of the community, but like literally sometimes it's just Maris and I sweeping the floor in the closet, you know. It's
that's why the role exists, because it's all the things that wouldn't get done. And you know, since you've been there, Carlton, Tim before, I mean, Django has largely hit all its dates. I mean, 3.2 comes out next week when we record. But you know, there's a reason why you and Marius are paid, and you know, it's not all the fun stuff you'd want to do after a full day of programming.
Yeah, no, I think that's true.
Oh, I wanted to ask about, that new position, Eva. So you're a nonprofit. Django Software Foundation is a nonprofit. So we're not allowed to directly pay for code. For example, Carlton is a community manager. How do you guys work around that with something like a dedicated programmer position? Or at least that's been our understanding of a nonprofit in the US.
Oh, that's interesting. So we definitely do pay for code, I guess. I mean, so if we look at the grants that we've received for PyPI, let's use that as an example, because that's, you know, the warehouse, launching warehouse code was definitely paying someone through a grant to do that, which is definitely within our rights as a 501c3. So I'd be interested to hear more of where that restriction comes from for you all.
Basically been passed down through Frank, our previous president, was had that fully on board. So maybe we need to talk to our attorney, because that, I mean, Carlton, that rings a bell for you, right? I mean, your contract is like, structured.
So explicitly, Maris and I are community managers. Whilst we're allowed to contribute as volunteer contributors, the DSF does not contract us to write software. I don't know about, I don't know the legalities of that.
But okay. I'll look into that after this podcast. I mean, it sounds on the surface crazy, and it's quite possible that we had it wrong or it's changed, but certainly it would make things easier if either of those is true.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Frank has some good reasoning for that to be there. So I'd love to learn more about it. Maybe we need to have another podcast in the future where we get together as a group and discuss that. But I do know that, you know, the roles that we're hiring for are also along the lines of community manager, project manager, but that's mainly because that's what we need. But to hire developers in the future, once that structure is in place, that's definitely something on our radar. So I'd love to hear more about it if we're not supposed to.
Well, one of our new board members is a former lawyer, so I'm going to look into that. I mean, being a U.S. nonprofit too, I mean, that maybe we can talk about how international both groups are. So our current president is based outside the U.S. She's based in Africa. So that sometimes has some issues. Like, I think a U.S. address is used for filling out the nonprofit form. So I guess I say that as a way to, maybe you could talk about how global the PSF is. I mean, you're in Chicago, but Python and the PSF is very global.
Yeah, we do have a board of directors from all over in the world. Right now, we have one in Australia. We have some in Europe. We have one in Zimbabwe, which also does come with financial sanctions, especially for the PSF, which is a U.S. nonprofit. You know, we cannot send money to certain sanctioned countries around the world, which could be one of the obstacles. You know, as a U.S. organization, we also probably can't hire someone that's outside of the U.S., at least not easily. So we do probably, you know, look to contract. You know, if we were to hire Carlton next round, we'd probably contract with Carlton versus hiring them on as an actual employee of the PSF, because you can't get benefits living outside of the U.S. and whatnot.
Anna's based in Zimbabwe, actually.
Oh, okay.
but she's not paid, so.
Yeah. Well, our directors are not paid either. We have staff that is all within the U.S., at this point in time. And the developer in residence and some other roles that we're looking to fill, you know, if folks come from other countries to apply for those, we'll definitely take them in consideration just as equally as someone as from within the U.S., just hire them differently. So it's all legal and by IRS rules.
It's curious, isn't it? Because we're all just kind of software geeks, really, and we don't, you know. And then there's this whole legal layer on top of like, oh, we've got to do it this way and we've got to do it that way.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because even, you know, when I first started, we did have Kurt B. Kaiser, who was also with the PSF for over 10 years and retired a couple of years ago. And he was like our first accountant light, I guess we can call it. Because once we then, transitioned to a full accounting staff, which there are now three people working at different time capacities, we're really dialing into those restrictions and policies, and it could really add up. So for example, we're going through our first financial audit this year, which is something that you actually, you know, opt into experience, which when people hear being audited, they're like, why would you want to opt in for that? But as a nonprofit in the US, you have to go through that process in order to be able to apply for certain grants that are funded by government organizations.
So you said that we Will and I are like the PSF is so much bigger. It really is, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about, we were talking about before we started, I mean, so DSF accounting. So I'm the treasurer and I work with Catherine, who helps me, but it's, you know, we just do it on our own. I mean, it's basically we pay Carlton and Marius, we give grants to conferences, we pay the legal filing to be a nonprofit, and that's about it. Most
that's
of our
impressive.
Hostings, You know, most of our hosting stuff is donated, and almost all of it. And sometimes things happen there. There was something with Rackspace last year where they were doing things. And but we're fortunate that it's largely, we have a dedicated volunteer ops team that handles that. But it's, yeah, it has strains, but it's incredibly simple. So like our accounting statement is, yeah, we don't have three accountants. Though certainly I'd love to not have to do that part of of the gig.
You'd like three accountants. Like,
well, well, I mean, it's literally, we write a check to Marius and Carlton and, you know, a couple recurring things and then one-offs for conference sponsorships. That's, you know, the, I should say that the entire budget is under $200,000 a year. So
ours probably by the end of this year will be more than will probably be around 5 million. So I think we're a little bit bigger in that aspect. And that's probably why all the additional accounting tasks are needed.
Right. So can I ask, where does that money come from? Is it corporate sponsorships or individual? It can't be individual members.
That's a great question. It must be corporate. So I think a large portion of that I have to account for our financial reserve, which has been a really big topic, especially since the pandemic hit. So since 2008, when we experienced almost bankruptcy, I guess you could say, because of the, you know, the market situation back then, the PSF really noted that, hey, most of our revenue comes from an in-person event, which is, you know, really dependent on socioeconomic factors happening around us. So let's make sure we have a financial reserve in place. So in case another market crash happens, in case, you know, XYZ happens, we can still continue our operations through that difficult year. And my, oh my, am I really glad that that was in place for when 2020 happened, because 6 weeks before PyCon US, all of a sudden, you know, you're canceling the event, scraping all your contracts for any kind of fees or legal implications that you need to prepare for, and just crossing all your fingers that you don't lose any money on it.
And at that point, you're on the hook for everything.
Exactly.
Basically.
So we now have at least a year and a half worth of operations that we can pay for in that financial reserve. So that, you know, we, especially knowing that we've almost now needed it twice, in at least in my history of being with the PSF, which is only a half of the PSF existence, it's definitely something that, you know, I, for one, will make sure the PSF always takes consideration for, and hopefully all future board directors do as well. But outside of that, we have, you know, our corporate sponsors, which is definitely the majority of the funding, as well as individual grants that we've received. So if we look at, if anyone peeks, and maybe we can include a link in the podcast later on for when it's published, to our annual report. If you look at it, a lot of the chunks goes to packaging and PyPI. A lot of funding has come in from CZI recently, as well as the Mozilla Open Source Support Office has funded a lot of the work. And when you receive, you know, money for $300,000, $400,000 worth of work in 1 year, that's going to be a substantial part of your budget for revenue.
Yeah, reserves is, so that's something as treasurer and on the board, we think a lot about as well. So we have, that was something Frank Wiles, the previous president, was very good and focused on. So we have a year's worth, but at the same time, so it'd be, that should be more, but we also are not as tied to an event in the same way that you are. We have, there's the DEFNA, which Jeff Triplett, who's works with Python, is on, that provides funds. And we have had a number of issues around DjangoCon Europe, in particular going virtual. And as you say, all those costs that are borne by individuals. So we've had, the board has had to do a number of things around that, but we're, because I guess we're smaller and more flexible, it's not as big a concern, but it's still the concern. And, you know, that's one of the big things is I would like us to get a year and a half sounds good. 2 years sounds better, you know, right. Both in case something happens, but also, hopefully Python doesn't go away, but if Django ever goes away, which it will, you know, that's a graceful decline. It's not just, you know, boop, like we're done. And so we need to have funds to handle that.
Sure. Absolutely.
Carlton, your face right now. I mean, hopefully not.
Well, I'm thinking we're going to maintain Django till the heat death of the universe. So
well, that's like
there's, you know,
there's this Buddhist thing. You like stare at dead bodies and watch them dissolve to like think about it. You know, it's coming. Anyways, so that's something, a concern that we have to Well, can you
let's talk about PyPI.
Wait, yeah. Well, actually, well, so very quickly, just so Python versus PSF. So on Django, there's a Django developers list, and they do their thing, and the DSF has no direct control over what they do. So we can't tell them to put a feature in, and those are very separate. I believe it's similar with Python. Can you just go over that distinction?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess before I go, can you tell me, does the DSF own any trademarks for Django?
It owns the Django trademark copyright, and that's basically it. So something else we periodically have to do is go in and enforce that, but
yeah,
it's very rare.
Absolutely. It's same for the PSF. So yeah, I guess in that sense, I mean, overall, if you know all developers decided to really go against you know the policies and good work that we've been putting forth, then that can always come into play. But we have, just like similar to the developers list, we have now the steering council, which precedes the BDFL model, which I'm really excited about because that has really opened up the door to have a you know structured partnership alongside with the PSF. So we can work with them to A, not only support the work that they need to be doing, but then once that work is kind of itemized and let's say, you know, prioritized, then we can help fundraise for that work. So they're supported in that capacity, which is really exciting and partially why the developer in residence is going to be published soon, hopefully by the end of this week.
Wow. That's
great. That is exciting.
Well, I'm thinking about the, you know, big companies in copyright, and Carlton, I'm blanking on this. I won't look it up. Well, so the DjangoProject.com website, for example, that code is open source. It's BSD. And was it Amazon, I believe, gave us a heads up. It was either Amazon or Microsoft that they're going to be using it with a new skin, basically, for some big internal site, which they're allowed to do as long as they provide attribution. But that's one of those ones where, like, what is the copyright status of, you know, we had to, like, double check. Because, you know, while Django, they can't say this is Django, but, you know, the code is... for that site is open source. And if someone really doesn't like what the team is doing, they can go fork Django and maintain it if they want to.
Just call it something else. Yeah. Same.
Yeah, exactly.
Here.
Yeah. So, you know, there was something on NPM. Someone had a Django package called Django. I mean, it was inadvertent, but it basically like bundled Django with the JavaScript thing. And so we had to go in and say, you know, we need to own Django on NPM, but it's fine to have a third party package. So those are just the types of things we have to do, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Well, I think bringing up trademarks is a very interesting part of the role because I never thought that I would know so much about the legal aspect of things than I do now. I've actually been internally kind of trying to promote the amount that we spend on trademarks as to it, the official, like, so I don't know, if you look at a annual impact report, expenses and incomes are usually split up and the way that you support community services is bundled up into something called programs. And I've been trying to get trademarks to be bundled up into that just because we, you know, technically all of the money that we're spending on trademark support and filing trademarks around the world is technically a community support system, right? Like if Python or if Django is trademarked in whatever country, then it's just so much easier to make sure that it's reflective of the community and, you know, of the code that you all work so hard for.
For me, it's the big thing that the DSF does, and the PSF is very active in similar thing. It is the community side and, you know, things like code of conduct and the inclusive deprograms and all these stuff. And without the DSF there to kind of play that role, the Django community, for all its goodwill, wouldn't be able to maintain it. I think, you know, because you'd have bad actors and you wouldn't have the the ability to deal with those.
Exactly. Bad. Exactly.
Can you, I still want to talk about PyPI, but I wanted to first talk about why people in the Django community should be regular members of the PSF if they're not already, because on the Django side, and many people don't know this, so I'll repeat it. So there's a board of seven of us that's elected every year. And then there's around 200 individual members that anyone can be. So you nominate someone for that, and it needs to be approved by the board and other people. But, you know, if I feel like a lot of people don't know about that aspect of it, because it's, you don't have to pay for it. It just puts you on the list of the 200 people who vote on the board, who sometimes if the board can't solve something, will ask for input. I believe there's, so talk about the levels within the PSF.
Yeah. So when I first started with the PSF, that is exactly what the membership structure looked like. And then over a period of a few years, that kind of expanded to kind of open it up for people to self-certify and not just get voted in by a group of people, as a way to kind of open up membership to people all over the world and to help us diversify our membership. And I think it worked fairly well. And now we have several structures. So we have basic, which is just simply signing up online and saying that, you know, you want to be a PSF member. And it just adds your name to the list of thousands of people that, you know, say that they want to be a member and support the cause, which I think is the easiest and simplest way to kind of support the PSF. Outside of that, we have contributing and managing members, which then kind of breaks into the tier of folks that do vote on, you know, board of director elections, as well as any kind of bylaw changes, people that we report our finances to, for example. And they are people that self-certify that they spend, you know, X amount of hours on something Python related. It could even be maintaining Django, right? It could be core libraries, third-party libraries. It could be people that organize events. It could be people that organize their monthly meetups, whatever the case may be. And then we have the... Yeah,
I think it's important just to interject there that it's not a high bar. It's only like, you know, a 5 hours a month or something.
So yes,
if you're
exactly
involved
that,
in any project in the Django world at all, you reach that bar and you can be a contributing member.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's actually really cool that a member gets to vote on such things like board of elections and bylaw changes. I mean, these are things that actually impact and shape how the PSF grow to be. You know, the board of directors are selected to help us kind of steer how that PSF vote goes along the way.
Yeah. And then you were going to say the other layer.
Yeah,
sorry.
No problem. So then we have, I'll kind of interject with our only paid layer, our only paid tier, and that's the supporting membership. So we kind of say that those that, for example, might not have the 5 hours a month to contribute to our organization, but maybe they have $99 a year. And if that's the case, then we'd love to have you as a supporting member. And they also get to vote on PSF matters. We, in the future, hope to kind of change that up to not just be $99, just because $99 isn't the same value in the US as it is in Poland, for example, where I'm from, right? So we want to be able to kind of be alert of those scenarios. So hopefully in the coming year, we'll kind of change that up. But the last tier is fellow members, and those are probably most similar to what you all have, where people get nominated and voted in by our fellow work group. And it's probably like the most prestigious tier of membership that we have.
So way more complicated than Django.
It is way more complicated. I don't know when this is going to air, but it's probably not going to air today.
Mid-April.
Okay. So our membership drive will be over, but that doesn't mean that people shouldn't become a member. And if they ever have any questions, they could always contact me.
Yeah. And actually, so speaking of membership drive, so of the Django's $200,000, a quarter to a third of that comes from a promotion we're going to be doing in April with JetBrains, where for the month you can buy PyCharm and 30% off, and all the proceeds go to the DSF. So that's sort of a one-off that we've done for the last 5 or 6 years. And again, because Django sort of exists to exist, that's our main, you know, one of our main funding things, right? Mm-hmm. We have that. Then we have a handful of companies that are at the highest tier, but it's around, you know, I think 30-40% is individual contributors, mm-hmm. and then a solid 60. So it's probably not as weighted towards corporate as a lot of places, but if we needed to raise more money, obviously going corporate one way or another would be a lot easier than people donating.
Sure. So out of curiosity, is the DSF structured that corporate sponsors are also members?
We don't really have that distinction. I mean, so this is actually something that Carlton's going to be working on, that the board has approved, is that members, they get a prominent place on the site, they have a badge they can use, but they'll get a couple tweets. It doesn't much go beyond that. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something we're, you know, looking at in terms of giving them more and what that looks like. So that's something, you know, Carlton, with all his time as a fellow, like, for example, Carlton's been, you know, putting out 3.2, which comes out April 6th. And then he's been working on Stripe changed all their billing. So Carlton's been having to work on our billing page. And then once he's done with that, Carlton can look at integrating with GitHub sponsors, which we've added last year, but we want to show that. And then also, you know, improving the corporate member experience. So right now it's very manual, but having it so that they can log in and self-serve more than they do now.
That is a long to-do list, Carlton. If you ever need any help with the sponsorship coordination, I'd be happy to kind of review or chat with you.
Brilliant, because yes, I do need help. I mean, I take on these jobs so that Marius can focus on the framework more. And he, if I provide air cover doing these kind of things, he's got more capacity there. So that's super. But this is kind of one thing I did really want to pick your brains about was like, you know, drumming up corporate sponsors and managing them, and you know, like it must, because that's surely where the money is. Like to get a corporate sponsor on board, it just sort of like massively dominates individual members.
It really does. I mean, 65% of our revenue comes from PyCon, and the majority of that is sponsorship. So it's definitely a telling there. It's just now the matter of making sure we have a diverse set of programs that sponsorships can apply to and not just PyCon. So for example, I'm not sure if you've seen, but we recently redid our sponsorship program completely, where before it was just PSF and PyCon, and now it's PSF, PyCon, PyPI, and CPython. So now we have four buckets that sponsorship goes through. So it's not just, hey, we want to make sure that the impact sponsors get is a, you know, improved, especially since we're only having a virtual event this year. We want to make sure that their impact is worth their time and money. But also because it helps fund, you know, these two additional large, you know, smaller ecosystems of the Python community, which is really important.
And so do you try and provide visibility that for, so if I, you know, I'm a corporate sponsor, I've come in, like what is it, I get my logo in all the key places, is I get key mention, I get mentions in the right places, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we revamped the sponsorship program, we did obviously had to redo the PyCon benefits because we've never hosted a virtual event. So it's been an interesting process. We'll see how it pans out in May, but our team definitely has been, you know, learning all these new things that we've never had to deal with before. And part of that is what kind of benefits do we give our sponsors? So right now it is a lot of visibility on our websites, whether it's PyPI.org, whether it's Python.org, whether it's, you know, on our jobs board, jobs.python.org, us.pycon.org. We wanted to make sure every aspect that we could brand, we could offer to our sponsors, just because, you know, sponsorship is such a large chunk of the PSFs and Python sustainability.
Yeah. I think for Django sponsors, one of the big things is hiring. If you say, mm-hmm. you know, when you get a hire in and you say, oh, well, you know, we're sponsors of the DSF, then it's sort of like, oh, you know, that's a good thing when you're a Django naut looking to work for a company. If they're involved in the DSF, then that's kind of
absolutely
a cool thing. But I think we do need to do more, Will, on this. We do need to.
Well, this is like the conversation Carlton and I have all the time. I mean, it comes down to me to two things. One is we're all volunteers, and the second is we need a clear, it's a little chicken and egg. Like, yeah, we could go raise a bunch of money, but until we know exactly what we'd go for, and perhaps we're wrong about paying for software, but even so, like, we don't have that clear, this is what we would do with the money. Like in the past for new features, like we had Postgres support was added, or Postgres full text search was a Kickstarter. I mean, it's so junior league. So I know you're sitting there saying, well, there's all these things you want the PSF to be, but where we're sitting, we're going, wow, you're so high above us in terms of all your functionality. Speaking of which, PyPI, I want to ask about that. So that's truly internet scale, and that's grown, and that's probably where a bit of the funding goes to. Could you just remind people what that is and how much it's grown in the last couple of years?
Yeah. So PyPI.org is, you know, Python's main central location for Python packages and how those are distributed, whether they're corporate users or individuals sharing their hobbyist projects. I think that in the most recent years, the biggest growth has been around the packaging work group, which is the kind of central group that helps steer and manage PyPI.org, to getting some grants. And that has really helped its progression over time, and also show grantors the kind of success rate that this group has had with grants that they've received. They've done an excellent job with transparency, with reporting, you know, following back up with grantors, which is always a big thing, and just flat out managing the work. So that has been really successful. And honestly, we've used that success to help us kind of tell our story of other things we can do with grants, which has led to additional grants, which has been awesome.
You're just making me think about the infrastructure around grants. Because, for example, we got a $5,000 grant from Google last year. And the amount of hours that Catherine, the assistant treasurer, and I had to spend getting that money, it's almost unsustainable to keep doing it each time. Like, we finally built that up. So like being in Ariba and their payments and this, that, and the other thing. And then, you know, we could definitely do a better job talking about where the money went, but there's a whole slew of grants that Django could get if we had the time to apply for it, monitor it, and do all those things that you just mentioned. Yeah. That, you know, if they're giving you money, they have, it makes sense that they would want something back, and sorting out what that is and being able to say, here's an example of what we did in the past. Something I hope Django can do a little more of in the future.
I think you also bring up an excellent point on the accounting side, how much work is needed. For example, let's say we receive a grant for $300,000 that needs to hire three contractors that we at that point have to track their timesheets. How do we get their timesheets? Who approves their timesheets, right? All of that. If we can automate that, which our accounting staff is looking to do, that would make the process so much easier. Because when PyPI.org received some of its first initial grants, that was all done manually by our team, which is a lot of back and forth. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. And it comes out of the budget ultimately.
Yeah.
Because all volunteer time.
Absolutely. So going back to PyPI, I think that this will air in mid-April, so I'm going to hint to something really exciting happening, but we received another corporate grant that is allowing us to spend significant amount of money in 2021 to kind of help steer a lot of the work around Python packaging and helping kind of shape its roadmap over the next few years. So one of the things that I maybe sort of glazed over but didn't specify more, because PyCon is such a up in the air kind of situation, especially for 2022, will we be able to hold a 3,000 person conference? Who knows? We are really looking to diversify our revenue streams, and PyPI is one of those focuses, seeing what kind of functionality we can import, what kind of functionality we can add to, you know, I'm sure it'll involve some sort of import. What kind of functionality can we add into PyPI.org that makes it easier for corporations to use and things like that. So that is definitely something that's in our focus this year, just because it is such a grand tool for our community on all sorts of levels, you know, not just individual users and open source projects, but also corporate users.
And we talk about it all the time. Packaging is the one sort of last bad bit, you know, it's the one thing we've got to resolve. And Python needs a better story than, you know, the various competing options, and none of them quite interact. And how do you get it installed? If that could be a smooth, glossy story, then Python really would have the full tale to tell, I think.
Yeah, and I do think a lot of that will come from collaborative efforts between paid staff and volunteers. You know, all of these great ecosystems and projects have grown kind of beyond the capability of a volunteer to manage and run. So we're really excited that the PSF is kind of, you know, learning a page from the DSF book and putting money towards supporting those, you know, community managers, project managers, all that good stuff. And we hope to be able to sustain that in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, just working data, I see what's going on in the Python world. I just think that's all great. But working on Django every day, or, you know, I only do it part-time, but working on Django every week, it's like this just wouldn't happen if Maris and I weren't there, or someone, you know, if there weren't fellows. Yeah. It just wouldn't happen. And then, you know, Django would be unmaintainable.
Yeah.
Well, I know we're coming up a little on time. Are there any last things you wanted to mention? I did want to ask, just as a last question, so I see sitting in the DSF so many people doing kind of unseen work. I'm sure there are similar people in the Python PSF world, and I'm curious what sort of roles are those that, you know, people who are doing unsung work that they don't get the publicity for?
So one person that I'm sure, I think, William, you mentioned you're going to be interviewing E in an upcoming episode, yep. But they are a huge contributor to not just the paid work that they do for the PSF, but also all the volunteer work that they contribute to PyPI and PyPA in some sorts. They, mm-hmm. you know, the extra time and energy that they have, they spend on tasks, making it easier for people on PyPI or PyPA, you know, and it's incredible. As well, you know, the rest of our staff, and there are so many volunteers. I mean, we could sit just for an hour talking about that. You know, all of the programs that I talk about, whether it's PyPI, whether it's PyCon, all of those take hundreds of volunteers to happen.
Yeah, well, I know that I talked to E because they have office hours or did in the past, and python.org is a Django site, which is open source. And I had a question about how the Markdown is being implemented and had a really good conversation which is really open and wonderful to do for the community. I mean, no direct benefit to E.
I know that for a long period of time, it only supported restructured text, and then all of a sudden it had Markdown. So I wonder if that conversation, you know, helped that happen, which I thank you for, because personally, I appreciate Markdown more.
Yeah, no, it didn't. So I have a site, learnjango.com, to plug it, that uses Markdown in the back end. And there's a package being used that does RST and Markdown on python.org. And I was asking, why didn't you just do it raw, basically? And it was to support both of those. And then, of course, I was able to ask Jeff Triplett because he did the early version. Hey, Jeff, why'd you do that? And so it all becomes very, very, very small.
It helps to know the right people.
Yeah, at this point. Well, that's, you know, Carlton, if I have a question on Django, I just ping him at this point. So
yeah,
why I do the podcast.
You don't use the docs anymore. You're just like, Carlton.
Yeah.
Well, the dirty secret is the people who wrote the docs look up the docs all the time because they've forgotten too. So
I'm sure
there does come this, you sort of like look around, you're like, nobody knows the answer. You're like, oh, I guess I need to do some original thinking for a change instead of just Googling for anyways. Carlton, did you have anything else you wanted to?
No, I just have to say I'm awestruck by the way you managed to coordinate the PSF and all the great work you're doing. And I really wanted to pick your brains and, you know, get some insight and some thoughts into.
Well, I definitely hope that,
you know, things we can steal on a smaller scale.
Yeah, and I'm happy to have a chat offline at any point in time. I like the fact that within our community, it's, you know, open source, but it's not just open source code; it's open source information and how we can make these groups and projects be sustainable in the long run. So I'm happy to talk anytime.
Super! Thank you for that offer. That's amazing.
And I really need to sort out that legal question. You really have me thinking about that. So, Carlton, too. It's like, yeah.
If we could, in fact, fund people to do development, then, you know, there would be.
There's precedence. Python's doing it.
So. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We're definitely going to have to touch base on that one offline for sure.
Yeah.
Either that or we're going to get in trouble for saying something. I don't know.
Yeah, we can't put the episode out if it turns out we can't do that.
That's right.
Yeah.
The episode that never aired.
Yeah. But that is, you know, it is true that being a nonprofit, there are so many other things, additional things you need to do to be compliant and, you know, so only someone who also works at a nonprofit or runs one can sort of understand. It's not just.
This is by far my favorite podcast I've ever done, simply because it's more of like a therapy session than anything else. You know, people that can commiserate and understand.
It's like that every week. You should do.
No, it really is. Yeah. So we have links to everything in the show notes. Links to your personal Twitter, and people listening should become Python members if they're not already, for sure.
Definitely.
So thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you PyCon virtually or in person soon.
Salt Lake City, 2020. Fingers crossed.
Ooh,
thank you both so much. 2022, yes. We're not going back to 2020.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say, how's that?
Awesome. I love Salt Lake.
Thank you both so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right, everyone. We're at djangochat.com, chat Django on Twitter. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.